Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, welcome to another Rehearsal of a Book Club. I am delighted to be joined by the fake history hunter who has written the book Fake History, whose name, which has just already laughed at me trying to pronounce it, having found it on the internet completely wrongly, is Joe Hedwig Teoiza.
No, that's pretty decent.
Okay, all right.
I'll say it in Dutch one time.
Okay.
Jo Hedwig Teoiza.
Lovely. Can I call you Joe?
Of course.
That's good. fantastic. And you are you're in Holland right now, the Netherlands right now, which is very exciting for me to be.
Yes. I'm all the way far away here in the dark, windy Netherlands.
It's very exciting. One of my first girlfriends was from Holland, and she just recently got in touch. Well, it's just someone I snogged on a campsite. She recently got in touch with me again. So, you know, I've got an affinity for Holland, because that was the first girl I kissed was from Holland. So hooray for you.
You're on behalf of all Dutch women, you're welcome.
Thank you. And you may say it's fake history, but it's not fake history. But let's talk about your book, The Fake History. And you are dubbed probably by yourself the Fake History Hunter. What is that, and how did it all start, this book and this idea?
Well, I've been obsessed with history for as long as I can remember. Like little girl, while my parents were sitting on the beach on holiday, I was just nagging all day. I want to go to a castle. I want to see a museum. This is boring. So I managed to make it my job. You know, I've been a historical consultant for museums and film and television for decades now. And one day I had a bit of spare time and I looked on the internet and I tried this social media lark, and to my surprise, there was someone on there saying stuff about history that wasn't true. I mean, I was shocked. So I very politely corrected them. And in one case, they were really happy about it. They were, thanks. That's interesting. Glad I learned that. And in another case, they got really, really angry and upset. And I enjoyed both those interactions very much. So I decided, let's go and do this a bit more often. And I used my normal Twitter account, my own Twitter account. And then I thought I should probably make a special one for it so people know who I am and what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, you have one social media account for pictures of cats and dogs, and I'll use the other one for hunting fake history.
Very good. Well, yeah,
well, yeah, it got a bit out of hand.
Yeah, it's got a bit out of hand. Well, it appeals to me in that it's the kind of thing I quite enjoyed using social media for. Back in the day, it has got a bit less fun in that sense. Mm-hmm. I did a thing where I corrected everyone. Well, not corrected, but answered all the on International Women's Day. I found all the men who asked when's International Men's Day, and I let them know when it was because they assumed there wasn't one. So the kind of pedantry that goes into this, I am a very big fan of, Joe. I'm very, very much into it. And what I like about that, and obviously you've collated some of these into a book, 101. In fact, Things That Never Happened is the subtitle. The ones that get very pedantic that you really throw yourself into are really good fun. But a lot of it's sort of interesting with history, because a lot of the things that are the most famous things in history, the things that everybody knows, turn out not to be true, almost exclusively, or turn out to be untrue. So King Harold being shot in the eye would be the first thing that probably most British people know about history, and that's probably not true.
Yeah, Queen Elizabeth never bathing and Vikings having horns and all that thing. And those are the fun ones. I mean, especially the ones that people really don't like hearing that they're wrong. But because I'm so addicted to history and I love researching, I can spend days looking for something nobody ever cared about or ever will care about again.
Yeah.
But I just love doing that. It's a bit like being a detective, you know, the one thing I wanted to be but couldn't.
Well, I like it because, you know, in a way it's sort of, you could say, and I'm not saying this, one could say, oh, you're taking the fun out of history. You know, if you tell people that the thing that gets people into history isn't true, then they'll be upset. But what you do with all of these is you probably uncover much more interesting history as a result of looking into it. In
my experience, the truth is almost always much weirder and stranger and interesting and fun than myth. But on the other hand, there's always, my stories, my debunking has already been used in schools as a lesson. So children are learning the fun, not just the fun of history, but the fun of correcting others on fake history. And, you know, you are combining history with detective work.
Yeah.
And to me, those are two very exciting, fun things. And for me, it's just... And that's also why I don't always understand the way people react, because if someone says to me, you're wrong, and here's the evidence, I go, oh my God, that's fantastic. Yes. That's so interesting. You changed my entire perspective. I've got new stuff to learn.
Yeah.
And, you know, other people go, how dare you? Start screaming and crying and all that sort of thing. But yeah, as I said, either response is fun for me.
Yeah, and it has, I suppose, an important. It is largely fun and educational and interesting, but it is also, I think, important, especially as social media goes more and more crazy and people get more and more into conspiracy theories and weird theories, that someone's there just to say, no, hold on. And what I like about this book as well, there's no agenda behind it other than the truth. So some of the things are what, you know, a lot of people would say, well, that's even though that's made up, that's quite a positive story. But you would still, you know, I think the interesting one is the idea that Beethoven may have had African origins and may have been black, which obviously, to debunk that, some people might say, oh, but, you know, you're taking away someone who might be of African heritage. But then you'll say, well, he wasn't, but here are some people who we should be celebrating instead. So
yeah, exactly. And those are also really cool discussions to have. Sometimes you have an argument that starts off really hostile and mean and aggressive and rude and all that sort of thing. When you very politely say Beethoven wasn't black, people start attacking you and screaming and shouting. But sometimes, if you're lucky, you get to talk to someone you disagree with, but who is rational.
Yes.
And you end up convincing them. And sometimes they teach you something new as well. And then they go, oh, now I know all these other black composers who are much more interesting than Beethoven, because the one of them that was like, he was fencing and having duels, and he was like very, very handsome, unlike, I'm sorry, Ludwig, unlike Beethoven, it was really exciting. So you can give someone a better story, which is so exciting. Go away. That's my dog here.
Oh, that's okay. Bless you. <away. laughs>
So you know, that for me is the very best result, when you give someone a new perspective. You don't destroy someone's fantasy or what they wanted to believe, but when you do, you give them something to replace it with, because there's always something, and that's yeah, I love that.
Yeah, and with the Beethoven one, you know, there's a sort of little addendum at the end that you've added, you know, presumably as you were about to publish, saying, oh, they've just done the DNA analysis of his hair, and, yeah, you know, found out some interesting stuff, found out that his grandfather wasn't his grandfather, but nonetheless, yeah, that he was European.
Yeah, the book was literally going through the last editing version, and I said, so I'm sorry, but I have to add this. They literally yesterday announced this big news that they did the DNA on the hair, and they figured out that I'm right.
I mean, yes.
Which is always nice.
Well, previous guest, David Mitchell, who has written a book about called Unruly, about the Kings and Queens of England, will be upset about he's annoyed about the fact that Vikings didn't wear horns, and he's insisting that he wants to imagine them still wearing them.
Hey, that's fine by me. I mean, I have to admit, it looks cool. Nobody disagrees with that. The Dark Ages sounds cool. Nobody disagrees with that. And you can post all the pictures you want of Vikings with horns. Just add, you know, I know it's not true.
Yeah, that's true.
Which I hate. Because when I find someone tweeting, especially someone big with lots of followers, and they say, look at this art I made, or this picture of Vikings with horns, and you get ready to correct them, and then they say, but I know they didn't. And you go, oh.
But it'd be fun if they did. Well, you're probably an expert on medieval history, which again, there's a lot of stuff about you being annoyed about the way the medieval people are portrayed in films and in literature and thought of, which is a sort of backward, dirty people throwing feces out their windows, never bathing. So
yeah, the publisher had to say, we're going to have to combine a few chapters, or it's just medieval stuff, because it's one of those things that really gets under my skin.
But it's, I'm fat, you know, I medieval history is the thing that I have all the history I'm trying to get into, and I never learned about it at school, and so I've sort of, it is interesting, because I'm talking to Mary Beard soon. I might have talked to her by the time this comes out, and there's so much about Rome and the Roman period, and so much incredible evidence and letters and things you wouldn't imagine. And the medieval period does have this disadvantage of very little, you know, source material surviving, I suppose. So that's why people
for a while. I mean, yeah, there is a lot less written sources left behind.
Yeah,
but you know, we still have a lot of archaeology and architecture and you know, lots of other things. So we're starting to, we've learned so much about that era ever since. And it's, for instance, even I had no idea, but I read during research, I read about the conduit in London, which is, you know, some, they had all these pipes where they got fresh water from a spring, pumped it into medieval London for clean water. And I thought, that's interesting. That's very exciting. I wonder how many medieval cities and towns had something similar. So I started to make a list, and I thought, well, maybe 10, 20. And, you know, the list just keeps growing. It's right. Just something we don't write about. It's just something we assume didn't exist. I mean, people still had aqueducts, and they were building the new ones, or the conduits, which are pretty much the same thing except under the ground, which is smarter, Mr. Yep. Roman. So, you know, it's just one of those things when you look at an era and just assume something, you have this image in your head, you don't look for something that contradicts it.
Yeah.
For instance, how many bathhouses were there in medieval cities? We don't really know, because we thought there weren't that many. Archaeologists for a very long time, if they found a house with a gutter and an oven, they assumed it was a bakery, because, right, you know, it's got an oven. But now we know that with a gutter and an oven, it probably was a bathhouse. And sometimes bathhouses and bakers shared the same oven.
Right.
But when you assume that there were no bathhouses, you're not going to think, oh, that's a bathhouse. So you have to poke through all these walls and just break them all down and try and look at what you see from a different perspective. And that's not easy.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, archaeology is amazing for that. And because, again, it has no agenda, archaeology, really. I mean, obviously, archaeologists can do, but again, it's a very fact-based thing. And it's amazing now the stuff that can be picked up through archaeology and the particles that can be found and understood. But, you know, history itself, of course, is notoriously difficult to know what is true and what isn't true. So fake history, in a sense, is a lot of history. Obviously, the adage that history is written by the victors and all that sort of stuff, but it will be written, even sources are from a perspective at the time, and often one based on, you know, currying favor or saving your life or whatever. So it is, you know, it's difficult to say any history is absolutely true.
Yeah, it's the one thing that never changes, but also changes all the time.
Yeah.
Because what we know about it and what we think about it changes all the time. I mean, I think we can say about quite a lot of few things that this is, you know, fact. We know this happened. We know this is true. We've got so much evidence. But what will also always keep changing is our perspective and how we look at it and our bias, you know, because unfortunately, archaeologists and historians and experts and everyone else, we're still just humans,
yeah.
Which still is a bit better than AI, but we still mess things up and we change our minds. And yeah, that's so funny when you look at movies about any historical era or documentaries. They very often tell us more about the era the film was made in. Yeah. You know, the 1950s Middle Ages looked very different from the ones we've got now. It's fascinating.
Yeah. And, I've just lost a thought there, but never mind. We'll come back to it later. I'll think of it in a second. There's some of the things that surprised me about in the book, that the Iron Maiden was not real. It's going to be upsetting to heavy metal fans as well. This,
yeah, but it's also it's one of those stories where you secretly think I wish it was.
Yeah,
you don't tell anyone because they'll think you're a psychopath. But yeah. I think a lot of people think it was it's awful, but also pretty cool, pretty smart.
Yeah,
but yeah, that's and the fun. I've loved the things that are not true that have been true for such a long time, and that museums have said are true for a very long time.
Yeah.
Extra embarrassing.
So yeah. A lot of it's sort of Victorian people embellishing and making up stuff, and then art. So in the case of the Iron Maiden, people making them to put in museums, even though
someone makes up a story, probably a historian, often a Victorian, and they make up a story, and everyone reads it, and everyone goes, "That's very exciting," and they go to a museum and say, "Haven't you got an Iron Maiden? Because we read about it; it's really cool, and we want to see it because we're bloodthirsty Victorians." And then they say, no, we haven't got one. So they talk to their you know, their bubble, the collectors, and one of them is smart and says, yeah, sure, I've got one. And he makes one in the shed. And then suddenly every museum wants one. So suddenly every museum has one.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it is interesting, again, that how history can be faked. And so it is difficult to spot. The chastity belt as well.
Same thing.
Upset to hear that's not real.
Yeah, sorry about that. But, you know, the great thing... And the funny thing is, we've always, there's always been people who doubted that story, because if you think about it a bit longer, it doesn't make any sense. It's weird. It's just weird. But it's one of those things that museums had, and thanks to modern science, which is very embarrassing to some museums, they can say, well, this crown piece in your collection has now been checked by us, and we know that the bits are Victorian. And then they have to admit it. There's no more escaping. There's no more saying, oh, you know, historians all have different opinions and blah, blah, blah. They have to go, yeah, well, okay, we can't deny it. Yeah. End of story.
I mean, what I love, so much of this book is, I mean, a good chunk of it is you just going, well, it doesn't make sense. Why would someone have a chastity belt would cause a lot of disease and rub up people's skin and be a disaster? And it wouldn't be pleasant to have sex with them once you open it up. So why would
Try and wear one. Go try and wear one just for a couple of weeks, you know, and then imagine your husband being away on the Crusades for probably months and see what happens.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
But then it's interesting to work out why, what is it that is so appealing to people? I mean, it's obviously these stories that appeal and that stick. There's something that's appealing about them. The people telling the stories know, oh, this is a good story, so I'll stick with this.
No, it's like... With the chastity belt, it's pretty obvious, you know. It's hanky panky, and it's you know, it's violence, and it's dark, and it's Middle Ages. So those are all the words that the Victorians loved to combine, and people still love to combine. I mean, it's for some reason we like an era to be the way we imagine it, or I've been told to imagine it. And when something then clashes with it, we go, because, you know, the chastity, it just fits the Middle Ages.
Yeah.
You know, even if you don't know anything about it and someone tells you the story for the first time, you go, yeah, that's pretty medieval. it just so fits. And I have that as well, because I grew up with the same things and everyone else grew up with. So it's in my head as well. Some things just really fit with the Middle Ages, and they don't fit with the Romans, even if the Romans did it as well.
Yeah.
And we just have these images in our head that we can't break down easily.
And then sometimes just something just sticks. I mean, weirdly enough, I'm reading another book by James Wright, which is coming out in a few months, called Historic Buildings, Mythbusters. Mythbusting. Yeah. And there's a whole chapter about the spiral stairs.
I know him well.
And so I've read two books telling me all about how the spiral, there's the tour guide explanation is that, you know, this was easier to defend if you are sword fighting on a staircase. It was easier if it's clockwise to fight down. But again, it's one of those things that you think about for a second and makes no sense, but it's very often
repeated. It makes no sense. And I'm a bit frustrated that I haven't found anyone yet who's just actually gone and tried it. I mean, I know so many people suspiciously who own swords and suits of armor and pikes and bows and arrows. They have those things. I know a few people who own castles, but they just somehow, I can't get them to go and try it. I'm a little bit busy. Go away. No, go away.
She's talking to a dog. No, no one's.
I'm not talking.
I'm in another country. It's fine. I'm not harassing my guest. Because obviously, just from the point of view that not many fights would happen on this, by the time the invaders are in the staircase, it's a bit late to be defending the castle anyway. But it's very much a B-movie, 50s B-movie thing, yeah. isn't it? That you it looks cool in a film, but doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. No, and I think that if you try it, I mean, if you have a house with some stairs, just go on it and think, what would be smarter? Shall I go halfway down the stairs and fight with someone, or should I just throw a chair? Or just wait at the top of the stairs where I have all this space around me and can swing my sword and my halberd and I can, you know, do a dance, whatever,
yeah.
while the person I'm attacking is still standing on the stairs. It, you know, just try it.
Oh, and there's a lot of good stuff. There's 101 things in here, so we're not going to cover all of them, and nor would I want to, because I want you to buy this book. It's tremendous fun, and a book you can dip in and out of as well, which is always lovely because the chapters are nice and short, and you can go to where you fancy, so you can read it in order, or you can read whatever you want. But the first video game chapter is very interesting to me. The level of research obsession. You put in, an obsession you put in to go back and say Pong isn't the first video game, but B, like, video games being part of history is you know, as now as a 56 year old man, go, oh, me playing those video games as part of history. But also my dad studied maths at the Manchester University, so worked on that computer. So I read this and went back at Christmas and said to him, did you ever play, what was it, checkers or something on that he had a game?
Draft, something like that. Yeah,
it was. There was a basic game on this, and he said, "Oh no, we could." As an undergraduate, because I didn't know anything about him working on this computer, because he has an iPad now and can't operate it. So he's 87 years old, to be fair to him. But he said that they only got access to the computer at like 3 a.m. because all the graduates and whoever, and this guy creating this video game, would have been on there all day. So they got like a little bit of time to look at the computer in the middle of the night. So it was interesting to have that connection to that one, but also to think that video games go back to the 1950s is...
I am a gamer, yeah. And I have been since Pong, and I always extra enjoy when I'm playing online and I'm defeating some kid in Texas for them to find out that I'm in my 50s. They go, what? first they're crying because they've been defeated by a woman, and then they're crying because they're defeated by someone old enough to be their mum or even grandmother, which is always amusing. But for me, this was also an extra fun chapter to research because I knew some of these games.
Yes.
And I remember thinking, this is a new world. You know, when I tried my first computer game, I thought, wow, this is all brand new. So I know that if I read this as a child, I would have been disappointed because I have to once more agree with that my parents did something before me, before I did.
Oh. But also, if you're talking, I've got young kids who have just got a Nintendo Switch, and if I tell them my first video game plugged into the aerial of a TV, it was just a tennis racket, it does make me feel like I'm from the Victorian era. So and yeah, you sort of imagine. If you could go back to the 1970s and show us like a Nintendo Switch, how much our minds would have blown. I think we'd have got our heads around it, but it would have been a mind blowing.
We would have been so jealous. I would have just grabbed the thing and I would have played with it all day.
And you know, I love, there's a little bit at the back where you discuss how you can be your own detective, and I do love the ones where there's quite a few that someone's put a photo up and said whatever, there's a soldier carrying a donkey and here's the story, and the story is always wrong, and often it's a still from a film or a publicity thing from an advert or something like that, but you're very fastidious about finding the origins of these photos, however difficult they are, and there's tips on that, but it is, I mean, not easy, but relatively easy to find the provenance of a photo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's again one of those things that I just really enjoy doing, because again, it's a bit of that detective sort of work. You know, you're analyzing images, and I've had a little bit of image analyzing training, so you look at it and you try to, and I think, what's wrong here? Is it fake or not? And you get to dive into the archives and you get to chat with or email with dashing Italian sailors and mysterious members of the French Foreign Legion, and it's very exciting. And sometimes in the book it's just, you know, this is a photo and the story is not right, But the research is sometimes more exciting than the whole story. For a second, I was worried I signed up to the French Foreign Legion because I've filled in some Italian form I didn't really understand.
Okay. So if you want to do this yourself, you can do it. If you want to annoy people and upset people who think they've got a brilliant story and it's not a brilliant story, but it is, you know, it is sort of so pervasive, isn't it? The one about the soldier carrying the donkey on his back. The real story is more interesting than the fake story. It's sort of weird the way the fake story could take over, and you know, it's.
Well, it's only because of COVID.
Right.
You know, it's only because the photo before COVID, I don't think it was shared very often.
Okay.
And then suddenly someone made a connection with COVID, and they started using it for both sides. You know, both sides said, you are the donkey and everyone else has to help you. And
right.
Regardless whether you were in favor of masks or against it,
yeah.
Or lockdown or not, both sides used it to make the other side look foolish. And I was running between these two sides going, but you're all wrong. Everybody's wrong. Use a different photo. It's not right. It's really one of those pictures where you go, this is fun. And then you find the truth and it's even more fun.
Yeah.
And I love that. And there's, you know, there's still people asking me if I knew what happened to Bambi, the donkey. And it's so cute.
But is it frustrating? I mean, it seems like you enjoy doing this, but is it frustrating? Because I found it frustrating. I did this International Women's Day, International Men's Day thing for 10 years or so. I would do it every year and I'd answer everyone I could find. And it didn't, if anything, I thought if I can tell everyone, eventually this misunderstanding about International Men's Day will disappear. But it just seemed to grow, if anything. I think maybe right by the end, more recently, there's enough people doing it that I think, okay, maybe this will get through. But, you know, we're not going to check. You're not going to stop people doing this, and nor do you want them to, because you enjoy showing the truth.
Well, unfortunately, there will always be enough fake history to go around, and there will be new fake history to replace the old ones. There are stories here and there that come and go, and you think, okay, this one may finally have died.
Yeah.
And they go to the back of the list, of my hunting list. But new ones come, and some are fun and always a joy to correct, because you know what kind of discussion can follow, and you know, you can talk for hours about a subject that you enjoy. And some are just tiresome and boring, and you know that the people are just going to be rude and silly and talk nonsense, and it goes nowhere. But on the other hand, there's always surprise responses, so it usually remains fun. But some subjects I just go, okay, I'm done with that one. I'll just leave it, and maybe I'll come back to it in a couple of months or years or whatever.
Okay.
That's just the way it goes.
Yeah, I mean, most of this is really good fun and interesting and fun, and some of them because of the nature of this and because of the nature of the way the world's going and the way that. Facts aren't so important to many people who should know better. Some of them are obviously more serious. Some of them are promoting horrible ideologies. So you know, you're doing a job that's important as well as sometimes frivolous. It's a very interesting mix of of colours, isn't it? I suppose
And I also, I hope that in the end, if the people, you know, learn one lesson, learn how to think critically, you know,
yes.
Fact check what you share, start thinking for yourself. I mean, don't be too critical, because of course we've got a world full of people who don't believe anything anyone ever says ever again. And that's also not good. But you know, sort of trust the experts a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes it's working because, for instance, the Vikings have horns. I'm getting videos from school classes and pictures from school classes where an entire classroom is saying, oh, no, Vikings didn't have horns. So, you know, it's spreading. Some
yes.
of those stories, they catch on and, you know, there's hope for the future. But I think that perhaps we should indeed spend more time teaching, especially the next generation, to you know, check what they're being told.
Yeah.
And, you know, for us old people, it may already be too late. but, you know, it is, I think that's also I was taught that, you know, when I was a kid in school and I said, you know, I've got a boyfriend, but he goes to a different school. You don't know him. Or my dad has a gun and he's stronger than your dad. The entire class would go, prove it. And I've got a feeling today we live in a world where people say that and everyone goes, oh, really? Oh, okay. And move on. And I'm going, no, confront people you don't believe and, you know, talk and discuss and debate and.
Yeah, and
like
you
that.
Know, it is, and often, you know, for modern day things, people will show you a bit of a video or a bit of an incident, and they haven't shown you the whole incident, and so you don't know why this person's so angry or what this or why they've behaved in a certain way. And so I think to stand back and go, okay, well, let's try and get some more facts about this is always a good thing. So it's worth fighting the fight. I think it is worth fighting the fight, Joe. But it is. It's increasingly. I mean, I worry for the world because I think when politicians and presidents are sort of willfully spreading lies, which I suppose, again, especially if you go back in history, they always have done to aggrandize themselves.
But I think humans have always worried about the future and have all and politicians and leaders have always been lying.
Yeah.
But it's just, I think it's the quantity.
Yeah.
Not the quality of the lies. It's the quantity that makes things a little bit more difficult and perhaps dangerous today. Because if I make up a story and I put it on the internet, I mean, it's ridiculous. I've had tweets, and usually it's just a picture of a cat that gets, you know, but it's that's been seen by 8 million people. And that's that's insane. That's weird.
Yeah.
So if I make up a lie, it can go around the world in seconds, literally, and then it will take decades to fix it. I mean, the Viking horns is just one fashion designer thinking, let's put some horns on some Vikings 100 something years ago. And we're still debating that. So imagine the damage all this fake history and fake news and on the internet does. It's going to haunt us for centuries.
Yeah, and it's interesting that quite a few of them haven't been started maliciously or in an attempt. You know, there are pieces of art that have been misinterpreted or taken out of context, or just someone saying, put this here, you know, and it's not an attempt to fool people, but then people will see it and make up their own story. And all of that is interesting. And it is right at the heart of what history is, this book, which is what I love about it. And as much as, you know, it's disappointing to find out that Newton wasn't really hit by an apple and Napoleon wasn't all that short and all these things, it is, you know,
but shorter than I am.
Yes,
I feel some comfort in that.
I think he was about my height, so he'd be sure to be turned up now.
For us Dutch people, that's short.
The one thing you didn't cover that I thought you might cover that is covered in my book, Can I Have My Ball Back, was Hitler only having one testicle. I thought that might come up, but you can read my book to find out whether that's true or not. Do you have any feelings about Hitler's balls?
I keep my hands as far away from them as possible.
It is quite an interesting when you that I've had a little experience of delving into historical fact and fiction with that one and looking about where that came from. But it's similar to the Napoleon one, I suppose, in that it's, you know, that's a way of bringing down an enemy to say he's short or he's, you know, not brave or he only has one testicle, which I only have one testicle as well. So that's why I'm annoyed that people think that's a negative thing. But it's interesting to see. There's evidence either way in that one, but I think ultimately the answer to that one is that he had a couple in there. That's the answer to that.
Only Eva knows.
Yeah, maybe.
And his mum.
Yeah, and I think he did some nasty things to her, so she probably wasn't counting.
Yeah, probably.
But you go for 101. Obviously, you could have done a lot more, and you list at the end got quite a few that you haven't got to this time. Are you going to follow this up with another book, do you think? Are we waiting to see?
Maybe, yeah. I mean, I'm always collecting stories and new ones keep popping up. So probably when I think I may have enough, I may go bother the publisher and say, shall we do another one?
All right.
But
Hitler only has one ball. Put that one in. That can go. Then I've given you another one. So it's a reach of it, Vic. It's called Fake History, 101 Things That Never Happened. Do check it out. It's a lot of fun. Perfect gift for anyone who likes history or anyone who likes believing things that aren't true. and you can crush all their dreams.
I've been getting a few replies and a few bit of feedback of people saying I gave this book to someone who taught me in school
all right.
one of those myths, and I put a what do you call it
a bookmark.
I put a bookmark in that chapter for him, and I gave it to my old teacher or to my annoying uncle and things like that. That's
It's going to be great.
It's subtle,
very good for annoying uncles, I would say. I think this will shut them up or make them angry. Either way, that's the result, I think. So if they refuse to believe Joe, then that's their own fault.
Send them my way.
Crapper didn't invent the flush toilet. It's it will make you very sad about all the things you believed that weren't true, but we'll give you some new things to believe that hopefully are true. So, but then there may be another book down the 100 years time, someone will take this book apart and say all of this.
I hope so. that's the way it goes, and I hope I probably won't, but I hope to still be there, and I'll go, oh wow, really, oh cool, we found something new, because I didn't know there was a flush toilet in York, in medieval York.
Yeah.
I didn't know that, but it was, again, that was discovered while I was on the internet shouting about flush toilets, and then someone said, have you seen this one? I thought, oh, and until then I had no particular interest in toilets, and then suddenly it's all I ever wrote about and read about. Fascinating stuff.
I'm very glad. Well, keep up the search. Where can we find you on Twitter to find this?
Fake History Hunt.
Great.
So, that's me. I'm also on a bunch of other social media things, like Threads is one, I think.
Okay.
Great. And Facebook, that still exists.
It does. That's still going. And probably Twitter won't be going for long, so don't worry about that. I always ask the guests if they're reading anything by someone else they would like to recommend at the moment, or anything you've read recently you'd like to recommend.
The book I read, and it will not be much of a surprise, is Urban Bodies, Communal Health in Late Medieval English Towns and Cities by Carol Rawcliffe.
No. Okay.
That's a book written by someone as obsessed by details as I am.
Okay.
And the notes I kept and the pieces of paper I put in the book every time I learned something new or interesting made the book twice as thick. She's been studying this subject also for a very, very long time. And it just writes about the bathhouses and the toilets and the sewers. And I was going, yes, thank you. This is exactly what I needed. And it is nice when you read something new that contradicts with what you know or believe, and you learn something new. But I have to admit, it's extra nice when you read something that supports everything you already believe. I mean, having your bias fed it's delicious.
Well, that is one of the main problems of the world today.
It is.
Very succinctly put. But I'm glad glad you also like to find out you were wrong, though, as well. That's the important thing that has to go hand in hand with the being
delighted.
We're all
just humans.
Well, thank you very much. Do buy Fake History by The Fake History Hunter. I'm not going to try and say your name again so that I won't offend my few Dutch listeners. But thank you so much, Joe, for coming on. That was
very welcome.
Thank you very much to Chris Evans and Ben Evans, and we'll be back with more next week.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.